Hello everyone, welcome to a new chapter of this podcast. In this occasion, we have two guests. We have Emilio Pechuan and Alba Toll, both are psychiatrists. Dr. Emilio Pechuan is a psychiatrist trained at Hospital del Mar in Barcelona. He currently continues his clinical and research activities at the Hospital Clínico Universitario de Valencia, where he collaborates with the Early Psychosis Unit and the research group of this hospital, with Dr. Escartí and Dr. Aguilar. The research group belongs to CiberSAM and to the Research Institute of the Hospital Clínico de Valencia, with Juan Nacher serving as the PI at both institutions. Dr. Alba Toll is a psychiatrist trained at the Hospital del Mar in Barcelona. She is currently a postdoctoral researcher at CiberSAM and a psychiatrist at the Hospital de Mataró, where she also works as a senior researcher in the psychoneuroendocrinology and stress in psychosis research group. Dr. Alba Toll holds a PhD in psychiatry, and she obtained cum laude with international mention from the Autonomous University of Barcelona. In recent years, Dr. Toll has been a sub-investigator and principal investigator in several studies and clinical trials related to schizophrenia and first episode psychosis, both nationally and internationally. She also coordinated two major national multicenter studies, Survive and Schizomics. So welcome both of you to our podcast, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for a kind introduction, Miguel, and for inviting us to the podcast. And it's a real pleasure to be here today to talk about our study on clozapine used in first episode psychosis. So we believe this is a very important topic as it addresses a clinical stage in early psychosis care where treatment decision can truly shape long-term outcomes. So we are very happy to have the chance to share and discuss about our findings. So thank you so much.
First of all, I want to congratulate you both on this work. It's a great achievement to have studied 255 patients with a first episode of psychosis and to have followed them up for 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. Personally, I found the paper absolutely fascinating, and I encourage anyone who hasn't read it yet to read it. The title is Clozapine Use in the First 2 Years After First Episode Psychosis in a Real-World Clinical Sample. In addition to asking you about the article itself, I'd like to take advantage of having you here to ask you a few questions at the end about clozapine more broadly, because to me, clozapine feels like one of psychiatry's never-ending debates. I remember when I was in medical school, my psychiatry professor already told us that clozapine was underused, and that's surprising, given the strong body of evidence supporting it. So, could you please summarize the main findings of your article for us?
Yeah, sure. As you said, Miguel, in our study, we analyzed clozapine prescription patterns in a real-world cohort of 255 patients with a first episode psychosis, followed 2 years in an early intervention program in Barcelona at Hospital del Mar. So first, we found that around 30% of patients met criteria for treatment-resistant psychosis, but as you said, about 80% actually received clozapine treatment, showing a clear underuse of this treatment. Moreover, we also found a median delay of 55 days to clozapine initiation and observe frequent metabolic side effects, which are well known to clinicians. Finally, we wanted to explore if there were any variables at baseline that could predict which patients will need clozapine treatment in the future. So we think that this will be very useful for clinicians. So helping to initiate the right treatment early and in these treatment-resistant patients. And in this case, we found that the only baseline factor associated with clozapine use was a lower GAF score, suggesting that patients with worse functioning at the beginning were more likely to receive clozapine, so as expected. In summary, we can say that clozapine as you say, is still underused despite all the evidence of the efficacy. And so we think that there is still a need to improve early identification and treatment of patients who are likely to become treatment resistant.
Thank you very much. Very interesting. I really recommend reading this paper. And one question I want to ask you. You recruited all your patients through a specialized program. So I assume the psychiatrists in that program were highly familiar with the treatment protocols for this type of patients. But do you think that in community mental health centers or in places without these specialized programs, there may be more resistance from psychiatrists to prescribing clozapine? What do you think are the main reasons for that?
Well, thank you, Miguel. That's an excellent and very relevant question. Indeed, all the patients in our study were recruited from a specialized early intervention program, which has a high level of training and adherence to clinical guidelines. But even in that environment, we observed that clozapine was underprescribed. As my colleague Alba pointed before, in our study, nearly 3 out of 4 eligible patients did not receive this treatment. This underuse is not unique to our setting. Studies have consistently shown that clozapine tends to be underutilized, especially in early phases of psychosis. In the United States, for instance, overprovatil prescriptions rates are estimated to be as low as 2 to 3%, and only a few states report rates above 10%. In Europe, prescription rates vary significantly, around 10% in Denmark, 13 to 14% in England, and about 14% in Spain. So, to your question, yes. I do believe that in community mental health centers, there is likely to be even more resistance to prescribing clozapine. There are several reasons for that. One of the most significant is fear. Fear among professionals about the potential adverse effect of clozapine. Some professionals have even called it clozaphobia. It is true that rare but serious complications like agranulocytosis or myocarditis generate a great deal of anxiety, especially for clinicians who are less experienced with the drug. In addition to fear, there is the practical inconvenience of blood monitoring. In most countries, clozapine requires frequent blood tests, particularly in the first months of treatment. This is not only a barrier for clinicians who may worry about logistics, but also for patients who may perceive it as a burdensome. In our study, for example, 35% of patients who started clozapine eventually discontinued it. Some due to side effects, but others simply to poor adherence. Fortunately, some alternatives and solutions have been proposed. For instance, some healthcare systems are now exploring less invasive or home-based blood monitoring systems, including point-of-care devices or mobile nursing units. These innovations could reduce the burden on both patients and providers and may help facilitate early initiation of clozapine when indicated. The last important factor is education. Studies show that many clinicians feel insecure about how and when to initiate clozapine, especially in younger patients with early psychosis. Offering specific training programs, clear protocols, and better communication between primary care, psychiatry, and lab services could make a big difference.
Thank you, Emily, for your answer, because I think that you pointed out many interesting things that I'm sure they influence on our clinical practice. And I'm sure that you mentioned the anxiety that many psychiatrists feel when they are about to prescribe or when they prescribe clozapine. And you mentioned several side effects that are rare, but we are worried about. And I think that, in my opinion, we have concerns with good education because they are rare and they usually have treatment. Now, I'd like to ask you about a usual side effect. And you reported it in your results. And you mentioned in your results that patients treated with clozapine gained more weight than the others. Do you think this weight gain is solely due to the drug? Or could it be that being more severely ill these patients may also take less care of their lifestyle? And most importantly, is this weight gain clinically significant? And I ask this last question because I think that many times when we read our papers, it's not only about statistical significance, it's also about clinical significance.
Yes, this is a very interesting topic and an issue in the closed loop treatment. Of course, weight gain and metabolic syndrome observed in closed loop users are absolutely clinically relevant. But we think that sometimes it's not only due to closed loop. So in fact, most of the time, it has a multifactorial etiology. So we know that closed loop itself is strongly associated with metabolic adverse events. And in fact, and more than 40% of the patients with clozapine treatment have metabolic syndrome, which is much higher compared to other antipsychotics. But at the same time, patients with more severe psychosis often have worse baseline self-care, such as poor diet, inactivity, and more severe negative symptoms, which also is a risk factor for metabolic syndrome. For example, in our cohort, despite lifestyle interventions, metabolic issues persisted, underscoring that the drug effects cannot be separated from the illness-related factors. And we think that this is clearly illustrates the clinical relevance and the importance of taking a proactive and multidisciplinary approach in these patients.
And Alba, I'm going to ask you like a more philosophical question. Okay. Like, so let's think together. So do you think a side effect like weight gain, like a few kilograms, should limit a therapeutic option? Because I am asking this question because if we weigh the pros and cons, how important do you think is to control symptoms in relation to the presence of certain side effects that are, in my opinion, not that severe or not that limiting for the patient?
Yeah, in my opinion, it's not. We have not to decline clozapine for the weight gain. It's true that weight gain is important and should be monitored and managed. But we also have to think that clozapine remains the only antipsychotic with solid evidence in treatment-resistant psychosis, offering symptom remission, relapse prevention, and importantly, reducing suicide risk, which is very important in these patients. And moreover, it has been shown that significant delaying in starting clozapine treatment seriously compromises the response rates, dropping about 80% to around 30%, which is a lot. So in my opinion, instead of avoiding clozapine, the strategy should be early initiation of non-pharmacological lifestyle interventions like dietary counseling or exercise programs, and pharmacological support as metformin or newer treatments, semaglutid, for example, may also be considered in these cases. Thus, we advocate for a balanced and personalized approach with shared decision-making, as we believe that the patient's opinions and priorities also are essential when addressing this issue. So to summarize, we think that we should not delay clozapine when it is indicated, but we also have to implement metabolic safeguards from the day one.
Now, I totally agree. And it's curious because there's a debate that has been ongoing for years and decades about clozapine. But the truth is that this is the drug with most evidence in treatment-resistant psychosis. So and there are many reports that highlight that it is underused in many countries. This is not a national phenomenon in Spain. I mean, this is worldwide. This has been reported in many countries. So thank you very much. I think that your article is very, very interesting. It's easy to read. I mean, it has a lot of information, a lot of data. You also, you put several comments in the discussion that are very interesting. And I think it's worth reading. I really recommend it to our listeners. And just to finish our chapter, our podcast, to wrap up, I'd like to ask you a couple of broader questions about clozapine. Does it make sense that clozapine is still considered a third-line treatment or should be used earlier? And the second question I want to ask you to wrap up, to finish the podcast, why do you think psychiatrists so often turn to polypharmacy, even though it's not supported by scientific evidence, before prescribing clozapine?
Well, Miguel, that's a great final question. Traditionally, clozapine has been considered a third-line treatment, only recommended after two failed trials of other antipsychotics. This positioning is based primarily on safety concerns, especially, as we mentioned before, the risk of agranulocytosis and the need for regular blood monitoring. But today, many researchers and clinicians are questioning whether this delay is still justified given the advantages of this medication. There is increasing evidence that earlier use of clozapine could lead to better outcomes, especially in young patients with first episode psychosis. Several studies have shown that delaying clozapine can reduce its efficacy, particularly if patients spend months or even, as we see, years cycling through ineffective treatments. This is especially problematic because early psychosis can be considered as a critical window, meaning a time period during which the brain could be more responsive to effective treatments. In fact, some countries are already moving toward earlier clozapine use. For example, in parts of China or in New Zealand, clozapine is often used as a second-line treatment. Now, regarding your second question about polypharmacy, this is a particularly frustrating issue. Even though there is little to no high-quality evidence supporting the use of multiple antipsychotics at once, polypharmacy is still very common in clinical practice. One reason may be that clinicians perceive it as a more conservative step compared to initiating clozapine. But the reality is that antipsychotic polypharmacy is not an evidence-based alternative to clozapine. The available data suggests that combining two or more antipsychotics does not improve outcomes, may even increase side effects such as sedation, metabolic issue, or extrapyramidal symptoms. In contrast, clozapine is the only antipsychotic that has consistently shown superior efficacy in treatment-resistant schizophrenia. So, when clinicians delay clozapine initiation by using other strategies, they may be unintentionally prolonging the period of ineffective treatment. And again, this is particularly concerning during the early phase of illness, when early targeted intervention can make the biggest difference.
Thank you very much, Dr. Emilio, for your answer, because I totally agree. The truth is that clozapine is a classic in psychiatry, but it's very effective. Personally, I find it a pity that polypharmacy is often used before considering clozapine. So, Dr. Emilio Pechoan, Dr. Alba Toll, it has been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for sharing your time with us. I hope we have contributed with this podcast to educating psychiatrists and doctors in clozapine, because I think that clozapine should be in our minds and we should use it more, because when it's well indicated, it's a great option, and in many occasions, the best option. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Miguel, and thank you for this conversation. We truly appreciate the opportunity to discuss our work. And also, we would like to thank the Spanish Journal of Psychiatry and Mental Health for supporting this project and for helping us bring attention to this important topic. So thank you again.
Thank you so much.